Welcome to the Triathlon Age Group Journey Podcast. My name is Matt Summer, and I'm one of your hosts. Along with me, as always, are Jay Kinney and Jillian Carlson. We are everyday triathletes trying to balance family, work, and life. Some days we're successful, some days we're not. But our goal of this podcast is to bring to you every week a different guest to demonstrate how we can all learn to live and balance triathlon, training, family, and life. With us today for episode number 45 is Dr. Jim Taylor. Dr. Taylor is an internationally recognized authority on the psychology of performance, sport, and parenting. His professional expertise encompasses performance and sport psychology, child development and parenting, and coaching education. Dr. Taylor has worked with professional, world-class, collegiate, and junior elite athletes in tennis, skiing, cycling, triathlon, track and field, swimming, football, golf, baseball, and many, many other sports. He has also worked extensively outside of sport, including a business in education, medicine, technology, and fine performing arts. Dr. Taylor is the author of over 19 books and is a highly sought-after speaker around the world. He has hosted 3 podcasts. His blog posts have been read by more than 10 million people, and he himself is a world-ranked alpine ski racer, and he's also a second-degree black belt in karate, a sub-3-hour marathoner, and an Ironman national champion and world champion triathlete. We are very fortunate to have Dr. Taylor with us today. But before we get into Dr. Taylor's story, Jay, Jillian, how's your week been?
Yeah, it's been a week. I'm in recovery world, and I guess recovery turned into illness and recovery from illness. So woke up with a frog in my throat on Monday, and it turned into quite the energizing turned into wiping me out energy wise. So it's been a long week, but it's funny. Yesterday, it just lifted like a light switch turned. You know, I went from body ache and soreness when I woke up and fatigue to just it was gone by afternoon. So it was very bizarre. Even my throat and voice isn't reasonably come back. It's not 100%, but as of yesterday. So can't say I got much done in the last week in terms of triathlon and training, but you know, December is about my recovery. So it's all good.
I tell you, man, that stuff is floating around here at the fitness center. I mean, it seems like every one of my clients is texting me like, hey, I'm sick, or a family member's sick. I mean, we got a balance of COVID going around. We have a balance of RSV, upper respiratory infection, and even a stomach bug. And I'm just like sitting here like, please don't come share this with me. This is the time of giving, but please don't give me that. So, you know, my schedule has been filled with cancellations all week. So, yeah, I'm glad you're feeling better, man. So
thanks.
Yeah.
How about you, Jillian?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to start to feel like a broken record here soon. Just this busy season in the finance world. Anybody else out there that might be in accounting or tax, I'm sure you can relate with me, but this is the busy time. So it's getting in whatever I can just to stay sane on the bike, at the pool, running away when I have to. It might be at odd hours of the day. And unfortunately, some of the workouts, I don't even make it to them. So I try, but at some point you got to let it go and just know that, hey, this is not the right time. You'll come back to it. And yeah, so it's a fine balance and just a lot going on with the kids and birthdays and Christmas. And I always roll straight from a November birthday to a December birthday, and everybody's wanting Christmas lists. And I'm like, I don't even know what I'm getting my kids for their birthdays. So I just need a moment. But anyhow, just living the dream and checking off one box at a time, all I can do, one step at a time. How about you, Matt?
You guys are making me feel guilty. I mean, both so busy and dealing with sickness. This is my easy time of year. I'm going to say that and just kind of smile. Like I've been saying, you know, November, December in the fitness industry, a lot of people tend to have a little bit more excuses, not making it to the fitness center quite as often as they should be, or prioritizing that. It's really a planning time for me. A lot of the athletes I coach, seasons are over. Not really too many big races going on right now. Triathlon season's over pretty much for the U.S. A lot of running races, though. So that's a lot of fun. I've got a lot of people just doing some little 5K, not that they're little. When a 5K is done hard, we all know those hurt. So we got 5K, 10Ks, half marathons, and super excited about what's coming up in the spring. Got actually a kind of a new slew of athletes that are going to be starting up in January with me that I'm excited to be co-piloting and working hand in hand with towards their 2024 goals. Personally, I've had a pretty good 2 weeks of training. I'm excited. I've got assessments coming up next week. I'm really excited for the swim assessment. I did just say that. I've really been putting, seriously, right? I've been putting a lot of hard work in the pool, being very intentional, and it's paying off. I mean, it's coming back. The confidence is there. I was having a conversation with Jillian, I think it was yesterday, and I was like, can you believe this is me talking? Like, I had the confidence in the water. And yeah, it's been interesting though. So from a pool situation, I'm having to drive 25 minutes to a pool now. Our local pool had a structural issue and had to shut down and we're not allowed to open. And that's the one where I'm an annual member. And then our YMCA, a lot of times they'll do reciprocity. Well, they're having pool issues. Tiles are falling off the wall in the pool. So they're having to shut down. There is no other pool. The closest pool is Greensboro or close to towards Durham. So I'm fortunate that I can drive out there. It might be a 20-minute drive to get to the pool for some people, and it might be 5-7 miles. This 20-minute drive is 25 miles because it's all interstate, but it's a great pool. I'm pretty fortunate. So just grateful that I can get out there. But no, the swim's feeling really good. I'm anxious to see what I can do on the bike on Tuesday. Really been confident there as well. So yeah. This development season's feeling good. The run, we'll see. Still dealing with a little couple aches and pains here and there. So I may forego the 5K just from the intensity side. But nah, it's been pretty good. My son's home. I love it. It's great. Tonight when we're done, we're going to finish decorating the Christmas tree. I left the Christmas balls, I think I previously mentioned, for him to put up because it's not my favorite part. But when it's done, I got two gingerbread houses we're going to do together. We got the elf puzzle out on the table and we're going to do the Christmas ball. So, yeah.
Nice. But good for you, Papa.
Yeah, trying and feeding him. Holy heck, have I spent some money on food? That's all I'm going to say there. But he's a growing boy, so can't argue.
Nice.
But I will get, I have to say, I'm proud of him. He made Chancellor's List. I think he's got all A's first semester in college. So, I mean, between calculus two, chemistry, engineering, anthropology, and there was one other class. I'm pretty sure he has straight A's. So, yeah, very excited.
Well done, Max.
Yeah.
Good job.
So, anyway.
All right. What do you got dialed up for us as quarter of the week?
Well, it's this one was not intentional. I know Dr. Taylor is a psychologist, but this is not intentional. But this one goes right along those lines. So I think it'll be a good one for us to get some insight from him as well. We've talked about this a lot on the pod, but here we go. To be successful, you need to face your hardest opponent, yourself. And I think that is so true in all areas of our lives, particularly sport. Our mind is our own worst enemy. It truly, honestly is in all areas of training. I think for me, especially in the pool, and that's kind of what I was talking about there when I was talking about myself in the water, is this, my head, my brain, my self-belief is my worst enemy in there. And, you know, that's just one of those things that I got to learn to deal with and overcome. What do you guys think?
Well, I thought you said we weren't going to get into these psychological quotes this week. You said you're going to go easy on us.
I know. That's what I heard.
So first of all, I'm a little, I don't know. I was looking for a softball this week. The hardest opponent is yourself. And you can be so hard on yourself that you make your opponent even better. is another way of putting it, and probably the reality of where I'm dealing with that. You can't get out of your own way sometimes. It probably puts an emphasis on your network and the people that support you, and what resources do you have to work through the issues or challenges that are in your way. So yeah, your opponent is yourself, but it probably takes others to help you get through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, Jay. Yeah, I mean, it definitely applies in sport and in life. And whether it's yourself from just your own expectations or the little voices that are in your head. And I, Matt, like you said, on the pool, just kind of working through from calling yourself and saying, you know, I'm not a swimmer. You know, I'm not good at this. I'm just going to, you know, muster through and try to make it, to saying, no, I'm a swimmer. I'm a swimmer. Even if the numbers, I'm not like what others might say is a swimmer. It's how you, I don't know, that's how I saw progression. Though I will say too, like on the bike, I'm a head case right now. So This, I could have a whole nother session with you, Dr. Jim. Just, but don't worry, we won't go there. We won't get into that on this podcast, that's for sure. But from having like thinking I've got the confidence and then I show up and it's just not coming out the way that I thought it would go. So just different aspects of my life. And even, you know, when it comes to parenting, right, you have a vision or an idea, or you might hear things of, oh, if you just do this, they'll watch or they'll do what you do. No, you cannot control what other human beings do. All you can continue to do is show up and reset your expectations. And in your own head, if you think I'm not a good parent or I'm not good at making dinners, you're probably right. So I'm trying to reshift my own mindset, but yeah. Thanks, Matt, for going deep. I thought we were getting it easy this week.
I thought it was an easy one. I don't know. Jim, what do you think about that one?
Yeah, so obviously I'm biased given what I do for a living, but the mind obviously plays a huge role in triathlon. And a couple of thoughts on that. First of all, on race day, when we're competing in triathlon, we're actually competing in three races. And I don't mean swim, bike, run, or transitions. The first one, of course, is against our competitors. If we're at all competitive, we want to beat people and move up the results and maybe qualify for a big event like Kona or national or world championships if you're a short course guy like me. But before you can win that competition against your opponents, you have to win the competition against, no, not yourself yet, against the course. And because the way I put it, that I anthropomorphize, that is to say, I assign human qualities to non-human things. So I think of in the morning, the swim, the bike course, and the run course get together and have a little meeting. And they say, how can we really F these triathletes up? And the water says, I'm making it kind of cold and I got some chop. And the bike says, I threw in this monster hill and then some rough, then a headwind on the way back. And the run says, they're going to be super tired at that point. So I'm throwing in a hill right away. And then we're going to go on dirt maybe for a little while. And so before you can meet your competitors, you have to overcome the adversaries known as the conditions. But before you can win that competition, of course, that race, you have to win the mental race. And that's the one against yourself. And ultimately, that's why we're all in it, to overcome ourselves and our challenges and perceived limitations. But I think an important thing to keep in mind is that the mind is an unbelievably powerful thing. And it can cause us to do unbelievably good things or unbelievably bad things. And so our task is to, are we going to let it be a weapon against ourselves? Meaning loss of motivation, negativity, anxiety, distraction, fear, frustration, anger, despair, or we could use it as a tool to propel us forward in terms of being motivated, confident, believing in yourself, staying relaxed, staying focused, driven by passion and joy and inspiration and pride. And so, but it's so easy to go to the dark side if you're a Star Wars fan. It's so easy, especially later in a race. And I've done a couple of Ironmans and a bunch of 70.3s, and you reach a certain point where you've been out there a long time, but you have a long way to go. And it's hard.
Yeah.
But as I tell people, if it was hard, either everybody would do it or no one would do it, because that's why we do it. But in that moment, when your body is looking up at your mind going, guys, we can stop now. I get the point. Then the mind needs to take over. Otherwise, the body's going to win and psychologically and emotionally we lose.
That's great perspective.
I love it.
One of the other, and again, Jay and Jillian always get on me for sliding a second quote, but one of the other quotes I was debating upon was the mind is the athlete's most powerful muscle. And I think everything you just said supports that, substantiates that, and lets you really decide how are you going to leverage that mindset to either fuel you or consume you. And it's a choice that you have at all times.
Sure. And it's a really good point. And I actually use the metaphor of muscles all the time, because athletes can relate to muscles. And mental muscles, just like physical muscles, they can be weak, they can be strong, they can be injured. But if you're gonna push yourself to the limits, you have to exercise your mind. And there are five mental muscles that I deal with most: motivation, confidence, intensity. And when I say intensity, I actually don't mean mental intensity, like super serious. I mean this range of physiological activation, from really relaxed to really amped up to sheer terror. And even though that's a physical aspect of us, our intensity is affected by our psychology. And so if we're worried about getting beaten or not being able to finish, that's going to raise our intensity outside a healthy level. So motivation, confidence, intensity, focus, the ability to focus in an effective way without being distracted, without going to the dark side, super important. And then for me, the last inner layer of the triathlon psychological onion is emotions. Because I've always believed that the longer the triathlon is, the more it peels away the onion until it gets at your core. And I've often said that we feel more emotions in a triathlon than we do in many days of life very often. And because you're just raw. And so a lot of my work is about helping triathletes and other athletes for that matter to identify their strengths and weaknesses in terms of those mental muscles. Just like, you know, you go in and do physical testing and figure out what you need to exercise to prepare yourself to compete.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm ready to jump right into this. I mean, this is going to be great. I think for our listeners, you just got a glimpse of Dr. Taylor's insight into just my quote. Clearly, Jim is a very accomplished professional in his field. Obviously, having written several books and does a lot of talks and lectures nationally, but he himself is a very accomplished athlete and super excited to hear about his journey from alpine skiing into the world of marathon and triathlon. So, Dr. Taylor, great to have you. I'd love just to hear how this all started with your skiing ventures.
So, I grew up in Connecticut and Vermont, and my parents were skiers. And so, I started skiing when I was about 2.5. And most ski areas have junior race programs for kids. And I got into that when I was about 5 or 6. And when I was about 13, there are in the U.S. A number of what are called ski academies. And they're basically private high schools for ski racers. And the one I attended in northeastern Vermont, it was the first one called Berkmont Academy. And I went there when I was 13. With the aspiration of being the best slalom ski racer in the world. However unlikely that was, given the fact that when I was 13 in ninth grade, I was 4'9", 89 pounds.
Wow.
And so I attended Berk, and I really learned about the psychology of sport in my athletic experience initially, because I was going against guys who were way bigger than I was. And I was sort of an underachiever for a while until I was 16. And then a switch flipped in my mind. And all of a sudden I became super motivated because I had this epiphany. If I wanted to be the best ski racer I could be and aspire to be the best in the world, I had to start working really hard because I didn't have the natural gifts necessary. And I certainly didn't have the size. And I had a lot of failures, a lot of setbacks, a lot of struggles. But by the time I'd left for college, I was world ranked. I made the US ski team. And before you think I think I'm all that, my little descriptor of my experience as a ski racer was I competed against the best in the world, but they weren't worried about me. So obviously I have a long history of sports, but I was also a terrible endurance athlete. I was a terrible runner when I was younger. And so following in college, I competed NCAA in college. I was a top collegiate skier, and also through grad school where I was a member of an NCAA championship team. At the University of Colorado, I had a year of eligibility left. But in college, I got into karate. And I continued doing that for several decades out. And I did tournament fighting, which was an amazing psychological experience for me because there's nothing like going mano a mano with somebody. And the goal is to beat the hell out of them. There's something very primitive about it. And it's interesting because when I first started doing tournament fighting, I was very passive and I was getting whooped. And so because I'm not a naturally aggressive athlete, like when I was a ski racer, I skied really well technically, but I didn't like to attack the course. And in ski racing, they don't give style points. It doesn't matter how you look, it's how fast you go. And so I started to learn that in ski racing and certainly in karate. I had to assert myself. I had to impose my will on competitors, on people I was fighting. And that had a huge role impact on me, both athletically as well as personally, because it enabled me to be assertive. I didn't become an aggressive person, but I became an assertive person. And then I always ran through my, you know, early adulthood, but I didn't compete at all because I knew what would happen. And this is what happened. So I was living in Aspen at the time, Aspen, Colorado. And a friend of mine said, let's do this fundraising 5K. And I said, nah, I don't really want to do this. And at the time I used to go on weekends out for like 3-hour trail runs, just, you know, the zen of it, the beauty of it, all the exercise, all those things. But he talked me into it. So I did this 5K and I did pretty well. And I said, I wonder how fast I can get. And that was all that I knew.
That's all it took.
Indeed. Indeed. And so I tend to be an extremist. My philosophy is go big or go home, or anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And so I jumped right into marathons, and I ran a bunch of marathons. And after a couple of years, I'd broken 3 hours twice. And the second, and I had gotten close a couple of times. I was like 301, 300. And I like got really serious. I was putting in 75 miles a week. I had a coach. I was doing track work, and I got like 3 minutes faster. And so I realized that at that point in my life, I wasn't going to be a 2:30 marathoner. Right. And so around that time, I just moved to San Francisco, and I'd started giving talks to triathletes just through people at this health club I belonged to knew of me. So I decided, and I reached my marathon goal. I'm giving these talks on triathlon. Why don't I do a triathlon? And so I did this small icebreaker near Sacramento. And then I decided, I think I'm going to do an Ironman. So I sort of jump into these things. And so my next one was 70.3 Wildflower, a very classic race that I no longer have, unfortunately. Yeah. And I've done that race twice, and both times it whooped my butt. But anyway, so my first Ironman was Lake Placid. And had a great experience. I took it easy in a way, but ended up running the last 10K of the run super fast, and I passed like 1,000 people during the run, and I was like top 500 or something. The woman who became my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time. After the race, I said, if I even think about doing another Ironman, just slap me upside the head. Of course, 2 weeks later, I signed up for Coeur d'Alene. And fortunately, she didn't slap me upside the head. Anyway, over the next 5 or 6 years, I did another Ironman Coeur d'Alene, and it beat me pretty badly. But a bunch of 70.3s. And then, you know, with life and career and kids, I just lost my tri mojo. And literally, I didn't do a triathlon for 11 years. Yeah. And I kept active. I love riding, biking, and running, and lifting. I didn't swim for 11 years, but my tri bike was in storage. And then in 2019, I was out for running Quito, Ecuador, 9,500 feet. I don't know how it happened. All of a sudden, I got bit by the tri bug again. And this was July 25th. And so on August 9th, I did my first triathlon in 11 years.
Wow. And
my bike was dusty. It was an Olympic distance, and I was just hooked. And since then, I've been just massively passionate and committed to short course, Olympic distance, sprint, super sprint, and mixed relay, USA triathlon stuff. It's been really gratifying because I've seen a real trajectory in my speed. There's this one guy who I found out he was like top five in the nation in our age group. And he, at this first race, he beat my 25 minutes. And last summer, I finally beat him.
Nice. Wow.
And so I've won my first national championship last year. I've been on the podium at world championships 3 times in the last year. And it's so gratifying, and I love to train, and it's obviously given me a very different perspective from the psychological side, because it's one thing to read it in books or study it. It's something to live it.
And
I read a series on my blog called I Practice What I Preach.
Yes.
And where I talk about my personal experiences and tie it in with psychological stuff that people can relate to. And so, you know, we're in the off season, although I don't call it the off season. I call it prep period for 2024, because the only thing off about it is no racing.
Right.
But after the world championships in Spain in September, I didn't take any time off, but I gave my coach, Dr. Greg Rhodes, a couple months break, and I just rode my bike a ton, ran, basically did stuff that I enjoyed. And I've been back on the train since about November 15th, and did a whole analysis of my season last year, because what's been a challenge for me is that, like, I'm one of the fastest runners in the world in my age group, but I'm always playing catch up. Mm-hmm. And I didn't grow up as a swimmer. I was in the non-drowning category as a swimmer.
I like that. Me too.
In my life, never turned my head until I was a young adult. And it's something like you watch swimmers who grew up swimming and they move through the water in just a way. They have this relationship with the water that as an adult, I don't think you can ever get. Mm-hmm. And I don't weigh that much. I'm not a power guy. We identified these two major areas of weakness. If I want to be, you know, obviously I had an amazingly gratifying year, far better than I ever thought was possible to be one of the best in the world. But I'm a competitive guy and I want to see how good I can be. And so I'm not satisfied. And especially because there are I have clear liabilities. And so the goals this prep period for me are to improve my swimming and improve my biking. And swimming, obviously, a lot of work on technique and on the bike, both power work, but a huge thing for me is weightlifting. So I'm lifting heavily a couple times a week. And I started doing it last year, and I did make a big jump in my power last year, but I think there's a lot more to be tapped into. And it's just exciting to figure out ways to get faster.
You brought up a great point. And just from your perspective here, because I think all age groupers, and I think we're in a time of year, you refer to it as, like, I call it the preseason. It's not the off season. We're prepping for 2024. That fear that athletes have, and it's inherent for all of us, of taking time off, losing fitness. And I always tell, one of my quotes I always tell my athletes is, you can't get fruit from the tree year round. That's what I always stress to them, is like, listen, we have to have a harvest season. We have to have a growing season. But how did you personally, even in with the field that you're in, deal with letting stuff go and just kind of doing what you enjoy and not being so regimented and disciplined on the training? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I handle it by sort of objectively seeing the value of it and knowing the value of it, because I've worked with a lot of professional and Olympic athletes as well as age groupers. And it's such an important part of the year-round experience, because the fact is, at the end of the season, a long season, I think my season this year was 7-8 months. And obviously your body wears down, but also your mind does too. I mean, it's physiologically, psychologically, and emotionally tiring to be going out there every day and just grinding, however much we enjoy being out there. And so it's really important, especially for those of us who are pretty much every triathlete, super driven. I'm a type A in recovery. I'm a perfectionist in recovery. But nonetheless, I have some of those tendencies. And so so it's important to take a step back and remember ultimately why we do it. And why we do it is the joy, going out. I live in an incredibly beautiful area for biking, and to just get out in nice weather and enjoy the views and do climbs in places you haven't done very often in a while. And so my big emphasis this off season was just do things I enjoy. And plus, this had a little purpose to it, was like, I never liked climbing, because A, I'm not a power guy, and B, because most triathlons are pretty flat. But I've been getting out there every Sunday for rides between 40 and 60 miles with 3,000 to 5,000 vertical climbing, and just loving it. I mean, it used to be such a grind, to no fun to go up these hills, but now it's like, I want to do another. And so getting back in touch with what fuels you, and that's a metaphor that I use a lot, especially with my high-level athletes. Because if you can use the rocket fuel that fuels you, which is, passion, joy, excitement, pride, inspiration, versus fear or anxiety or stress or worry or doubt, you're just going to go, you're going to be so much faster because you are running on rocket fuel. Mm. And so, I'm not somebody who takes time off. I mean, I rarely even take a full day off, but because I just love doing it. But thanks to my coach, he's got a little bit and reins on me let's say Mondays might be a quote day off. I'll do a 45 minute spin or an easy swim. So it's just basically keeping the body going. And that, I like that. At the same time, I've really learned to listen to my body, because I'm not a kid anymore. And so when my body talks, it starts whispering. So it goes, "Hey, I'm feeling kind of tired today." And I tell my clients, don't wait till your body is screaming. Just listen to your body and listen to your mind, because there's occasionally a morning where, like, I have to swim at 5:30 in the morning at the local high school. Do I like getting up at 5:30 in the morning? No. Do I always wake up at 5:30 in the morning? Yes. But every once in a while, there'll be a morning where it's like I wake up without an alarm and I go, not going to do it. And that is actually a strength, not a weakness, because I'm listening to my mind, because I'm a super motivated guy. So if I don't feel motivated to go out and work out, my body and my mind are talking to me. And it's really important to listen.
Dr. Jim, one thing jumped out at me hearing the story of your history in sport was it seemed to align pretty well with the five mental muscles you just rattled off for us in terms of how you evolved as an athlete through the stages. Is there coincidence there? Is there a mindset that you just demonstrated how you work those muscles? Am I reading into this too deeply?
No, it's actually, Jay, a really great observation that I've never thought of, but I think you're right, because my first mental challenge with my mental muscles when I was young was motivation. And like I said, I was an underachiever. And then I finally found that motivation. And then my second greatest challenge was confidence. So when I was a young ski racer, up until I was 17, I had no confidence in myself. And part of it was I was a little guy. I got teased and bullied when I was a kid. I was an underachiever, and I was also very shy and introverted. And so overall, I didn't have a lot of confidence. And so that summer, after I was 17, I took this college course related to sports psychology, and it introduced me to a lot of the things that I talk to athletes about now. And it introduced me to what is for me the most powerful mental tool, mental exercise, and that's mental imagery slash visualization. What I found was that, so I applied all this information to myself that next year, and I had a breakout year, and I attribute it entirely to changing my mind, because I didn't get that much stronger. I didn't get that much better technically and tactically. So the confidence was built there. Also, because I didn't have confidence, I used to get unbelievably nervous because I didn't think I was going to do well. And after the confidence came in, I was able to relax, which led to better focus, which led to better motivations. And so I didn't develop this idea of mental muscles till well into my professional career. But now that you brought it up, it very much recapitulated my evolution as an athlete. So well done. I'm going to use that in the future.
On the intensity side, I also saw kind of a parallel. You mentioned karate and almost reprogramming your brain of, rather than flinch, leaning in and attacking. I watched my son learn wrestling in eighth grade, and to watch over a 8-week season go from the flinch to realizing, no, I have to attack, and dialing up and down that intensity is actually, I think, one of the hardest things to learn with a mental muscle. Is that been your experience with athletes that you work with, and let alone what you personally went through?
Yeah. So this idea of intensity, which is the level of physical activation you experience, that's a function of two things, because there's no one ideal level of intensity for every athlete or for every sport. So for example, you know, there's some athletes who just really compete best super chill, others kind of medium fired up, and still others really amped up. But the problem is, it depends upon the sport or the, let's say, the distance in triathlon. So you can't be like super, super amped for an Ironman, because right, you're just burning, you're burning fuel. But another interesting thing, and this is where I really connected with this at World Championships in Spain for the super sprint, which is basically 30 minutes of suffering, full gas, all out. And one thing I found was that, and I actually learned this from Lionel of all things, Lionel Sanders, where he did Super League, if you recall, a while back, and he did a simulation in Tucson, and after he said, this is way harder than an Ironman. Mm-hmm. And because he said he went out swimming really hard and he went into instant hypoxia, which is basically not enough oxygen in your system.
Right.
So what I started doing this year, and especially really nailed in the super sprint at the World Championships where I was third, is really being very conscious of my intensity before the race. So for that short of distance where you need to be 10,000 RPMs right into the water. You can't work up to it because it's only a 400 meter swim. And so in the 5-10 minutes leading up to the start, and it was a two at a time staggered start, I was doing push-ups. I was jumping up and down. I was not standing still. And I was breathing. And everybody else is just sort of standing there like that. Like that's what you do before a triathlon. You know, you be chill. And so, and it really made a difference. And so, but the other side of that is a lot of triathletes get nervous because mm-hmm. this is a monumental challenge. And I don't care if it's 30 minutes of suffering or 14 hours of suffering. It's a different kind of suffering. But when you're nervous, you have to do the same thing, but sort of opposite. You have to take deliberate steps to calm yourself down, to settle your physiology. Because again, there's only so much fuel in the tank and you need to save it for when the cannon goes off. So it'll get you all the way to the end.
Yeah. So I have a question. When you're out racing, do you ever find yourself either getting in your own head and having your own, like having to talk to yourself? Or is that why you go back to the short distance so you just don't have time to think and be in your head? Or maybe, Olympics long enough for you to maybe have some mantras and things like that that help you as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. No, I mean, self-talk is another incredibly powerful mental tool. And very quickly, I've got five mental tools that I focus on. One is goal setting, self-talk, imagery/visualization, routines, and breathing. So this will tie into what we're talking about in terms of self-talk, that invariably, even in a sprint, you have time to think, especially when you're on the bike or running. But also, because it's so hard, you have to be thinking or at least having a conversation constantly, because it is a battle, especially with that kind of intensity, between your body and your mind. So, you know, after you get out of the water and you're already out of breath and you're sprinting to T1 to get your bike, you know, in long distance, you know, you can jog it and, you know, take it easy. But I mean, I came in third in Spain by less than a second.
Wow.
So every tenth of a second counts.
Yep.
And so you're constantly having that conversation about keep it going and having mantras that work. I also talk about having power words that make you feel like strong and in control. And so I don't care the distance. It's your body will in some ways start communicating to your mind at some point. And maybe in an Ironman, it's not till for me, I think it was like 60 miles on the bike. And so at that point, you've been out there a really long time. And as I said earlier, you're going to be out there a really long time still. And also what happens typically in an Ironman between 60 and 90 miles is you have a nutritional crisis. And that's where, because your emotions start to follow your nutrition or your deficit. And that's where the emotions go to the dark side. That's where the self-talk goes to the dark side. And I learned after my first Ironman what to do in that situation. So when I hit 50, 60 miles in an Ironman, I'm fueling, I'm hydrating, I'm hitting it. And what I found in my second one, and also in 70.3s that I did, that it was less of a crisis. So it's really, really important, both when you're racing and also in training, to have some mantras, some key phrases that you use to get you through that. Because again, your body is saying stop. It might be doing a hard track workout or tough indoor bike on Zwift intervals, and your body's going to start screaming after a while, but the way you make gains, of course, is to tell your body to shut up, unless there's something really serious going on. And so it's really important. Quick story. So a lot of my triathlon stuff, ideas about the psychology of the sport can't come from my own personal experience, obviously. And I was doing a really hard indoor workout on my tri bike. And it was, I think, 6 by 6 minutes, you know, close to FTP. Or 90. And I was noticing the first two intervals, what happened to my power? You know, by 4 minutes, it's just heading south. And then for the third one, I had this epiphany. I don't know where it came from. It's like, I just thought, you know, wait a minute, you know, I'm choosing to do this. So I had this idea come in my head. I choose to push my limits. So that last 2 minutes, I was just saying that over and over to myself for each interval. And you know what happened?
Increased. Stayed up
or it increased. Exactly. And this is really important. And it's an evolutionary thing. Because our bodies, we like to think we're these highly evolved beings with this thing up here called the cerebral cortex and this thing up here called the prefrontal cortex. But the fact is, we still respond to perceived threats to our world, to ourselves, the way we did on the Serengeti 250,000 years ago when we first became Homo sapiens. And so because we are wired to avoid pain. So evolutionarily, pain is not a good thing for us. Because if we were in pain on the Serengeti 250,000 years ago, what was likely to follow? Death. Our primitive brain doesn't know the difference between being on the Serengeti 250,000 years ago and 2023 triathlon USA. All it senses is, I'm really hurting here. And through evolution, I've learned that from watching other people, if they're in pain for a long time, they're probably going to die. So the body starts resisting. And partly is the body starts to feel out of control. But thankfully, we do have this thing up here called the prefrontal cortex that enables us to make choices. And so by saying I choose to push my limits, I'm sending a very powerful signal to my body that I'm doing this on purpose, that I'm in control, so you don't need to freak out and kick the survival instinct in place. And I've shared this with so many of my clients in the last year or so, but it's amazing how something as simple as that can make such a difference in how your body responds. Because, you know, with training or racing, you're going to get to that point where your body says, you know, we're going to die here soon. And with all due respect to people, sadly, who have died. For most, it's not that kind of pain.
Right.
And so being able to practice certain mantras, words, phrases that mean something to you in training, because you can't just start doing mental training in the race. That'd be like saying, I'm going to start conditioning in the race.
Nothing new on race day.
Right.
Yeah.
Another little side note about that is that all triathletes do mental stuff. Well, what I mean by that is they do things to motivate themselves and to stay positive and to relax and to focus and so on. But mental stuff isn't mental training any more than going to the gym every 3 weeks and doing arm curls isn't conditioning. You need to train your mind. And yes, admittedly, some of that training occurs just naturally. But that'd be like saying, okay, I'm just going to get fit by just doing whatever kind of training program that I find or what I feel like doing every day. But if you want to maximize your physical fitness, you have to be on a program. If you want to maximize your mental fitness, you have to be on some sort of structured, comprehensive, consistent, effort-filled program. Thankfully, mental training doesn't take, 10 to 30 hours a week to do. Most of it you can incorporate directly into your training, your swim training, your biking and running, and with a little bit of time off, away from the pool, the bike, and your running shoes. But everybody says the mental side is so important. And yet, how much time is devoted to it in any sort of structured way? It's basically zero.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you're 100% spot on. I mean, I've been in the fitness industry now, 25 years. And when I was doing all my schooling and all my education, my undergraduate and my graduate degree, I will have to honestly say, and no offense, and I regret it now, the classes I dreaded the most were exercise psychology and sports psychology because they weren't the hands-on learning about, I was like, why do I have to take this? I don't want to do this. I mean, it was not of interest to me. Now that I'm out and I've been in the field as long as I am, they are the most important classes I ever took. Understanding the way the body works is one thing. Knowing how to, the biomechanics, understanding the kinesiology, the exercise phys, that's great and all. But the psychology of the mind and how to motivate, encourage, and to keep people exercising just for health and wellness. And then when we get to triathlon, that's a whole nother animal. Some of the things you talked about, the visualization, the imagery, the routines, those are all things that I will discuss with my athletes and the key words. One strategy I do is I have them write it on their hands. I have them use a Sharpie and write it on their hands so that they can see it in racing as a visual reminder of whatever their mantra or routine might be.
But being specific about what you're trying to target in that.
Right. And Matt, the reality is that every good coach, every good exercise physiologist might not have the fancy psychology degrees, but they're intuitive psychologists. Yes. So much of what you do is psychological. And I think what's interesting is that, again, everybody talks about how the mind is so important, but so little is done about it. And the reality is that you need to devote time to it because that's the final piece of the puzzle. And it doesn't take a ton of time. It just takes some awareness and some understanding And, you know, in many ways, it's not rocket science, but there's a lot of things you can do that are quite simple and yet quite impactful.
Yeah. I mean, one of the easiest things I do when a client comes in to start training is you got to build their self-efficacy, make them feel successful and accomplished, like they are accomplishing something and not being defeated. You know, if every person that came in, I said, all right, we're going to start with pull-ups or we're going to start with push-ups on the ground. Half of them couldn't do it. They would walk out defeated, feeling like, why am I even doing this? But when I have them do, you know, a body weight row or an incline push-up, they're like, wow, I can do this. And so I intentionally build things in that build their confidence until I call it their love language, till I figure out their love language of what motivates them, what makes them tick, what encourages them, what defeats them. Do they need to fail to be motivated? Some people use failure and the inability to accomplish something that gets them going, that gets their juices flowing. Other people, if they don't do accomplish something, they run and hide in a hole. You know, so it's crazy how impactful the human mind is on a success.
Jim, have you been injured? Or I know that you've worked with injured athletes, at least, because that's actually, I think, how I heard about you and heard about your website and had listened to some of your podcast. I think you've been on podcasts. So I've listened to some of your work and I've read some of your work. Are there additional considerations? So I know that we've got people listening right now that are either dealing with injury or fighting to come back from injury. And sometimes for what I've found myself, it's a lot easier to be, you know, shut off that part in your brain that's like, oh, if we push too hard, we're going to die. Because I can be like, no, we're not. We're going to get stronger. But once you've been through that injury cycle, all of a sudden, the mental game has been a lot harder that I've found. And I'm just curious if you've personally experienced or if you there's special protocol with athletes you've worked with.
Yeah. So first of all, I've written two books on the psychology of injury. So it's and I work with injured athletes all the time because when an athlete gets physically injured, their mind gets injured too. And it's a healing process. What I try to do is create a formal mental rehabilitation process to heal the mind as well as the body. Because these days, especially the surgical and technological and rehabilitative methodologies are so sophisticated that athletes can come back from what used to be, you know, a life, you know, career-ending sport participation-ending injury, and can come back physically 100% or better. But a lot of times they still don't return to their previous level of performance because they still have a fear of re-injury. They lose confidence in themselves because, you know, if you don't believe your leg's going to work, you're not going to be willing to fully commit to it, for example, let's say running. But yes, in September 2021, I was hit by a car during a training ride the day before the Malibu Triathlon in September. And, you know, I was very fortunate. He thankfully hit my bike and not me. If he had been 1 foot forward, I can't imagine what would have happened. But I had several broken bones in my leg, and I was on crutches for 7 weeks. I didn't need surgery, thankfully. So this is one of those things where I had to practice what I preached, and so I just focused on. I didn't have a pity party. I just said, you know, I can get back for next season, and this is what I need to do. And so invariably, when you're coming back from an injury, you can't do a lot of the things that you love to do, and often you get separated from the people you love doing them with. So your social network disappears, and it's really important. First of all, one thing I try to emphasize is that when athletes are coming back from injuries, they often feel like they're not an athlete any longer. They're an injured person. But in fact, rehabilitation is physical performance. And my goal is when an athlete comes back from an injury and returns to the field or the sport or whatever, that they're a better athlete. So it gives them an opportunity to work on areas that they're not very strong in. And so the only thing, fortunately, I was able to do while I was injured was swim, because I didn't have to have a cast on. And so I swam literally every day for 7 weeks, and I worked on my swimming. And I also did strength training around the different around my leg. So I did a ton of core, did a ton of upper body, and so I could be stronger in those areas. Another thing that's really important, though, is the single biggest piece of advice I've ever experienced and offered to injured athletes is stick with the program. Don't do more, don't do less. Because triathletes are super, super motivated. And so it's like, well, if I'm doing this many sets 3 times a week, well, if I do double that 6 times a week, then I'll get back sooner.
Yeah.
And it's simply not the case. And for example, I was coming back and I was walking and my leg basically, it hurt a little bit, but I decided I want to start running. Like this was like early December of 2021. And it hurt, but I ran a mile. It's like, I'm running. This is great. But then I went back to my, my orthopedist, Dr. Kevin Stone, he's world famous, patents, things like that, and he showed me my MRI from the injury to where it was right around that time. And it was not healed. You could see the different shadings. It was not healed. He said, Jim, I don't want you to run till February 1st. And I have a ton of faith in him. And so I didn't. And it was really hard for me not to. Although I was doing water running. But I waited till February 1st and we did another MRI. And he said, you know, you're good to go. And I was able to run comfortably and start building back up. And another key thing is just patience. I mean, I did my FTP test in March of 2022, and my power was like down by 20-25 watts. But, you know, I had to just work it back up and do the best I could. And I worked my way back. And by the end of the season, I was pretty strong. And that's where I won my first world championship medal. But it's a slow process, and you have to keep your eye on the prize while also just living every day in the moment and doing what you have to do.
Right.
To get where you go.
That's good.
As knowledgeable as you are in the field, do you ever find yourself not taking your own advice? Are you as human as we are? Because it's funny. I told you, every day, Dr. Jim, I put a different quote up on my whiteboard at work, okay? And one of the quotes I had up in the other day, it was a very comical one, was everything happens for a reason. Sometimes the reason's because you're stupid and make bad decisions. You know what I mean? And we all fall suspect to that at times. Do you find yourself, even as an expert in the field, doing that yourself?
Totally. Oh, completely. As you suggest, I'm a human. Just like with my parenting work, I'm a great parenting expert for other parents' kids.
Right.
You know, I have two of them and I struggle, maybe less than most parents because I have some knowledge, experience, this sort of thing.
Right.
But yes, I succumb to it. You know, I get frustrated, or I get down on myself, or I get a little nervous, things like that. It's just, you know, I was a person long before I became a mental coach, that's for sure. But at the same time, I have the tools to hopefully overcome when I go. I use the metaphor of forks in the road. So if I go down the bad road, just through my professional experience, I'm able to recognize when I'm going down the bad road and say, Jim, come on, you got to take the good road. And I'm able to take the good road, at least for a while or at some point. But, you know, when I'm competing, I'm not Jim the mental coach. I'm right. Jim the track. Yeah. And, but again, because at least for me, my mental muscles are quite strong and I've got a pretty good mental toolkit that I can tap into when I get metaphorical flat tires, air quotes there. And I just very briefly, I use that metaphor a lot, is that you know, if you're riding, you're out for a bike ride and you get a flat and you don't have an inflator, you know, pumper, CO2 cartridge, a lever or a spare, you're stuck on the side of the road. But if you have those tools and you know how to use them, you can put the spare in and get on your way. Well, that's a metaphor for me for triathlon and life. Is life, triathlon is, they're full of flat tires metaphorically. And so it's not a matter of whether you have the flat tires, it's do you have the tools to fix them. So if you're in the start of the race and you're nervous, pull out the relaxation tool. You're getting distracted by you know, a poor transition, you pull out the focus tool. You start to start to lose faith toward the end of a race, you pull out the self-talk tool. And having those tools, which you first develop in training, of course, is really a great thing to have to help keeping you get on your way, because I'm hoping I'm allowed to swear a little bit here, but shit happens in triathlon. That's one of my famous sayings. And so it's not whether shit happens or not, it's how do you respond to it.
And when it happens.
When it was not if, right, when it happens. And so that's where having that mental toolkit comes in, so you can deal with it in an effective way rather than just have it shut you down.
I love that. I am going to borrow that and give you full credit with my athletes, because I think that's a great setup of the mental flat tire and having the tools to repair it. So I love that. That is awesome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Feel free.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly want to be respectful of your time, Dr. Jim. Any last thoughts, questions, guys?
I want to know what's on schedule for 2024. I mean, we've heard a lot professionally. I mean, you're such a talented athlete. What's your race schedule look like for 2024? What goals do you have, or what big races do you have on deck?
Sure. So in the last 2 years, I've raced a lot. I raced 14 races in 22, 18 in 23, just because I love to race. But also my coach felt like that it was interfering with my ability to be prepared for the big races. And so this year I have three series of A races. First is multi-sport nationals in Omaha. Mm-hmm. And that's three races over 4 days of sprint, super sprint, and mixed relay. And then I'll go to nationals in Atlantic City, which is Olympic and sprint. September. And then World Championships are in Spain for Olympic sprint and mixed relay. And I'll do some smaller races in between just to keep myself sharp. And just cause, oh yeah, I forgot one other one. One of my other big A races is Clash Miami in early March. And that's a little longer. It's relatively short for the Clash races. It's, I think, like a Olympic distance plus 10 or 20%. And they have a sprint too. And I tend to do multiple races simply because it's bang for my buck. If I'm there, I might as well get some value out of it.
I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
So March, June, August, and October. And so that right there, that's 12, 13 races already. So it's still a bunch of races. But I find, again, I don't compete just to finish. I know I can finish. I compete to compete. And so around here, you know, there are a couple of good guys, but it's not very competitive. And so it's not that much fun. And for me, part of my fuel is to compete against the best in the world and see if I can compete with them or beat them. Because in my age group, there are a couple of guys who are just like freaks. And like this is one guy who he's been racing for like 20 years. He's won the national championships every year for 20 years at Worlds. A guy in my age group, he beat the field in the Olympic by 3 minutes.
Wow.
For that distance, it's huge. But again, you know, you can only do so much with what you got. And I blame my parents for not getting better genes.
And not getting you in the pool as a kid.
But for me, it's like trying to catch those guys. And each year I am. So maybe I'll finally beat them when they're dead. I don't know. But or I'm going to die trying. But it's just really fun to go against the best and see getting closer and closer. And that's why in this off season I'm putting so much energy into my swimming and my biking. And little side note, many triathletes are very tech oriented. And for my swimming, I've discovered two pieces of technology that have been absolute game changers for me. First is Form swim goggles, smart goggles with heads up display. Not only do you never have to look at the clock again or have your piece of paper, you do Training Peaks right into the goggles. Plus they have this new thing called Head Coach, where it gives you feedback as you're swimming on head roll and head pitch and time to neutral.
Wow.
And so so as you're swimming, look for ways to improve and you're getting immediate feedback.
That's
awesome. Super cool. And the second one, which I just discovered, is this company called EO Swim Better. And it's these hand-placed sensors that measure force vectors. And like, I've had coaches, I've swim coaches, and they're all good, but I just haven't gotten any faster. I'm stuck. And so I just started using these a couple weeks ago, and you see in clear numbers why I'm slow, because I'm pushing out this way, I'm going down too much instead of catching. And then I started just working on it the last 2 weeks, and I've already improved a ton.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because as you all know, it's all about propulsion and drag. Okay. And my drag's okay. And so now I can't wait to get in the pool every day because I'm not doing any speed work. I'm not doing any pull. It's all about changing my stroke.
Yeah.
And it's EO Swim Better. It blew me away.
Yeah.
I've seen those online. I have not had the opportunity to try them or know any athletes that have used them. They make little pings. Does it give you audible feedback or is it?
No, it doesn't give audible feedback. No.
Okay. I thought like in the commercial, I think you see it gives little pings. It almost sounds like they might, but it's interesting. I'm glad to hear that though. I might have to check those out.
Just because it's interesting how swimming swimming has basically is not letting itself be dragged into the 21st century of technology. I mean, biking, can you imagine not having a power meter? I mean, there are a lot of people who don't have them, of course.
Right.
But if you're super serious, you probably have one. And that guides everything. Yeah. And so I get a kick. Obviously, I get a kick out of technology.
Yeah.
I have a real quick question on the mixed relay and the age group format. Do you pick your partner? Or how is that?
That was my question. I was going to ask that too, Jay. Good one.
Yeah. So I have to say, mixed relay is my favorite event. Because again, it's super sprint distance. So 20 minutes to 30 minutes, full gas. But because it's a team event, it's super exciting. And you know, you can be ahead, you can be behind. At the World Championships in Hamburg, where my team was third in our age group, we were behind, and then we caught up toward the end. And so really thrilling watching the trackers and things like that. In any case, it depends on the race. So for Omaha, which is the multi-sport nationals, you pick your team. And I went out and picked three of the fastest people. And we were second last year. Three of the fastest people I could find, two women and a guy. For the World Championships, which were again in Hamburg last year, USAT picks teams. But they're basically based on your previous results in mixed relay or super sprint. So you basically have the first team is the fastest in your age group based upon results. And you go from there. Because in the past, when mixed relay first started to come into play, we get at Worlds in Montreal, I sort of signed up a little late for it. And I was with one woman who was a rocket and two people who were unbelievably slow. And with all due respect to them, it was really frustrating because we could have medaled, but they were just like painfully slow. And I don't judge them for it. It's just the reality. And so if any of your audience gets a chance to do a mixed relay, it is so fun.
It's a great new format that I'm so happy to see.
No, I was going to say, I've always wanted to do it because, you know, as much as the sport's about yourself, I still, at the core, I grew up playing team sports, and 1,000% I miss the team aspect, like on race day. Yeah, you can be cheering for each other, but to actually be like pushing outside of yourself for a greater purpose it's just so appealing, but it's finding people that will do that to you. And you want to know, for me, I want to know that they're giving it everything they have, because I'm going to give it everything I have. And so, yeah, finding that team and then actually being able to get out and do one is just something so appealing to me, but I just haven't quite cracked that one yet. So,
yeah. Well, one little thing about this, and I would like to plug the USA Triathlon and short course racing, because these days, people, if you say, oh, I'm a triathlete, you haven't done an Ironman? And it's like, that's the gold standard. And again, I've been there, done that. And gratifying and all those kind of things. But for most people who don't have much time, short course racing is incredibly gratifying. And if you have any kind of speed to go to nationals and to go to worlds and represent your country, like I get such pride out of wearing my Team USA kit and crushing those Brits, because they're two of the best in the world in their teams, their countries. But you don't have to, you can be fast and you can be good and not say you're an Ironman, and that's okay.
Absolutely.
So I encourage, for many people who they're thinking, I got to do an Ironman, otherwise it's like, what's the point? Then that is still tremendous gratification and satisfaction going shorter distance. Plus, it's not nearly time consuming or painful.
That's a great point. We just had Tim Yount and Chad Cunningham on episode 41. And that was one of the things we talked about along with Collegiate, was just the importance of racing local and supporting USAT and all the different things. So it's great to hear you reiterate that, because that was the big point, was it's big, you know, the big races are, everybody's going there and it's killing a lot of the smaller ones. So great point.
One last thing, Dr. Jim, how do people find you or get in touch with you or read up on you?
Super easy. I don't know if you've heard, there's this thing called the internet. And so I've got a website, drjimtaylor.com, drjimtaylor.com. Pretty much everything 95% of everything I've ever written is on there. On my blog, I've got a triathlon category. Also, I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, and people can follow me. And I usually publish an article a couple times a week. And also, like my contact information is on my website. And so if anybody wants to reach out and ask a question, I always answer. I'm always so appreciative that anybody thinks I have anything good to say. So so I encourage people to just drop me a text or an email. And if I can help, I'll do my best.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been to the site, like I said, last year. You guys listening, there's such a wealth of knowledge and just hacks that you can implement into, like Dr. Jim mentioned earlier, so much of about the mental training is applying it into your own training. And I know that was something I focused on last year. And, I think life and got away from that. And that's what I've been struggling with like lately. And so it's like, I got to go back and, you know, re-listen to those messages and reread the blog posts, but they're really, really, really good. I can't emphasize that enough, and super easy to find his website as well. So definitely encourage people to go out and help yourself, because I couldn't believe how much information was just out there for free.
All right. Well, when you say we wrap this up, guys.
Sounds good. All right. Well, just again, Dr. Jim Taylor, it's absolutely amazing to have you come on. For me, because I've read your work and listened to your work last year, this is kind of like a celebrity moment of, oh my gosh, I can't believe we have Dr. Jim Taylor on our podcast. I know that he's helped work with the professional triathletes. You know, last year again is where I had heard about you. And I just think, yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And it's been good to just hear some tidbits and some insight from you and hear just a little bit more about yourself as well in your journey, because it's not always, you know, the business side of things. We love getting to know our guests just a little bit more personally than everyday person might, you know, get to learn about you. And maybe even relighting some mixed relay. I think I heard Jay might be interested. Maybe we have to find some other ladies.
So I was going to say, we got three of us. So we need to just one fast lady. And
I think we know a few.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, Jane, Jillian, great fun. Appreciated. I love just talking shop and just chatting up with people who have a passion that I do. And it's been great fun. And I've really enjoyed sharing my ideas. So thank you so much.
Awesome. That's what we made this podcast for. So to our listeners, we thank you again for listening. And remember, you can find us on Instagram at Triathlon Age Group Journey. Or you can reach out to us if you have a story or a journey that you'd like to share with us at triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com. In the meantime, everyone, have a great week. Take care of yourselves, and I'll catch up next time.
And happy holidays.
Yes. We're going to
be taking a break through after the new year. So I hope everyone enjoys their season, and we'll catch you in 2024.
Take care, everybody. Train smart.